Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Monday, January 18th, 2021. Name in the news. Honor. San Angelo. Scholar Struby of Andrews was one of more than 160 Angelo State University student athletes and athletic training students who have been named to the Lone Star Conference Commissioner's Honor Roll for the fall 2020 semester. The Commissioner's Honor Roll is announced at the conclusion of each fall and spring semester and includes student athletes and athletic training students with a grade point average of 3.30 or better during the semester. 55 ASU student athletes posted a perfect 4.0 GPA for the 2020 fall semester. For the full list of ASU honorees, visit angelosports.com. Hello. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Monday, January 18th, 2021. Page 2 read. Serving abroad. Navy Chief Culinary Specialist Submarine Ryan Ash, a native of Midland, recently reported to Commander Submarine Group 7 in Yokosuka, Japan, after a successful tour aboard USS Louisiana, SSBN 743, in Bremerton, Washington. With his wife and two chihuahuas, he is ready to add Japan to the extensive list of cultural experiences he has had in his Navy career, and save as many animals as he can while doing it.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. This article is entitled, Pandemic Vindicates Saudi Arabia for Its Oil Market Pessimism, by Grant Smith, Bloomberg. For Saudi Arabia, bad news in the oil market has rarely been such a vindication. 2 weeks ago, the world's biggest crude exporter stunned energy traders by announcing that rather than restore halted production as planned, it would slash supplies by a further million barrels a day. The resurgent pandemic necessitated preemptive action to protect the oil recovery, said the kingdom's energy minister, Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman. That ran counter to the view of Saudi's OPEC plus ally Russia. But since then, plenty of evidence has emerged that Riyadh made the right call. On Tuesday, the International Energy Agency slashed forecasts for world oil demand in the first quarter as countries hunker down to contain new coronavirus outbreaks. China, which has powered crude's recovery until now, is locking down cities again and discouraging travel over the Lunar New Year holidays. It will take more time for oil demand to recover fully as renewed lockdowns in a number of countries weigh on fuel sales, the Paris-based IEA said in its monthly report. Oil prices have rallied by about 9% since the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies surprised the market on January 5th. The 23 nations, led by Saudi Arabia and Russia, had been expected to add another monthly supply increment of as much as 500,000 barrels a day. Instead, most of the group postponed the return of halted production, and Riyadh said it would make an additional cutback in February and March. Brent futures climbed above $57 a barrel last week, the highest in almost a year. That's brought relief to the depleted coffers of OPEC Plus members, including Saudi Arabia, which need prices far above current levels to cover government spending. Oil revenue, earned by the cartel, slumped 46% to an 18-year low of $323 billion last year, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Those financial gains don't come without risks. namely that the Saudis could over-tighten the market. If the rally encourages a flow of new supplies from U.S. drillers and other rivals, the kingdom's additional cuts would have backfired. A big chunk of shale oil production is profitable at current prices, according to IEA Executive Director Fatih Birol.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. Sol Ross athlete named ASC Player of the Week. OA Life at OAOA.com. Alpine. Tristan Lycon earned his 8th Career Player of the Week honor after being named American Southwest Conference Co-West Player of the Week in an announcement made January 18th by the conference office. The El Paso native helped lead the Lobos to a pair of conference wins against Hardin-Simmons and McMurray this past Thursday and Saturday at the Gallego Center. In January 14 contest, Lycon scored a career-high 36 points and matched a career-best 14 rebounds in a 77-70 win over the Cowboys. He followed that performance with a game-high 20 points, a team-high 8 rebounds, and a game-best 4 steals in a 73-57 win over the Warhawks. In the Saturday effort, Lycon moved to number 2 on Sol Ross's all-time scoring list, passing former teammate Caleb Thomason. He currently has 1,437 career points and is 288 shy of Sidney Hopper's all-time mark of 1,725. Lycon was previously named Player of the Week earlier this season on December 14th. Peanuts Pen Pals Find Comfort in Correspondence by Associated Press. The caption reads, Wesley Morgan, a 32-year-old in Denver, shows a letter from one of his Peanuts pen pals. After being furloughed from his job at the Denver International Airport, Morgan began writing to over 500 older adults living in isolation due to the pandemic. He says 142 responded and many have become consistent correspondents. Even before she opens the name on the return address, Nancy Sloan knows who sent the letter. The Snoopy sticker that seals the envelope is a dead giveaway. It's from Wesley Morgan, a 32-year-old fan of the comic strip Peanuts, who's been sending Snoopy-themed cards and letters across the country to ease the solitude of older adults in isolation due to the coronavirus. "He's kept me from being lonely," said Sloan, 67, a retired teacher, now quarantined at the Brookdale Senior Living Community in Denver. "I look forward to his letters." After Morgan was furloughed from his job at the Denver International Airport in March, he soon ran out of shows to stream and items to craft. "The house was always clean, and I did Tiger King like the rest of the world," he explained. "And then what?" Morgan learned of a friend's effort to write to people at a Denver nursing home and felt called to do the same, putting to use his beloved Peanuts cards and stationery sets collected and hoarded over many years. "I couldn't think of a better way to use this collection," he said. "It was something I could do from home. I didn't have to leave." At first, Morgan simply went to Google, scouring the internet for places or people to whom he could write. He eventually stumbled upon several Facebook groups like Forget Me Not and from the heart that take and share request four-letter correspondence. There he found eager lists of recipients ranging from dozens of residents of a nursing home in New Hampshire to a single elderly woman recommended by her mail carrier. Teeter-totters at U.S.-Mexico border win U.K. Design Prize. The Associated Press, London. A collection of teeter-totters that briefly allowed children on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border wall to play together has won a prize from London's Design Museum. The three hot pink seesaws were installed through the slats of the wall, with one seat in the El Paso suburb of Sunland Park, New Mexico, and the other in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. The artwork was put up on July 20, 2019, and removed from the politically charged border barrier after less than an hour. The Design Museum named the project Tuesday as the overall winner of the Beasley Designs of the Year competition for 2020, which considered 74 projects by designers from around the world. Teeter-totter wall was designed by California architect Ronald Real and Virginia San Frateo with help from Colectivo Chopica, an artist collective in Juarez. It encouraged new ways of human connection and struck a chord that continues to resonate far beyond El Paso and in the USA and Juarez in Mexico, Museum Director Tim Marlowe said in announcing the prize. It remains an initiative and poignant reminder of how human beings can transcend the focuses that seek to divide us. The teeter-totters were installed amid the heated debate over U.S. President Donald Trump's plan to build a wall along the almost 2,000-mile U.S.-Mexico border from the Pacific Ocean to the Gulf of Mexico.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, January 3rd, 2021. Section B, Life and Times. Master Gardeners. Pampas grass is an ornamental plant that thrives in West Texas. By Debbie Rowland, Master Gardener. It's a new year. Every week during 2021, we are going to feature one or two of the plants on Permian Basin Master Gardener's plant list. This list has been put together specifically for the West Texas area. We will give pros and cons, as well as planting tips and warnings. So here we go. This is one of my favorite plants. Pampas grass is a great plant for an area that needs a large accent plant. It thrives with very little water and lots of sun. This grass grows large white plumes of feathery shoots. First, a warning. In other areas of the country, this plant has been considered invasive. Probably because we have so little rain, that has not been the case here. However, a single plant in a small pot can grow as wide as 4 feet and 8 feet tall. I have two pampas grasses, and both are planted in an open area away from any structures. It is best grown in full sun in the lawn or a flower bed and not in a container. It can be grown as hedge, but don't plant against a driveway where it can block lines of sight. Plant in well-drained soil in a hole that is 3 times as wide and 3 times as deep and the root system of the new plant. Place the plant in the center of the hole and backfill. Be gentle and pat down the soil around the plant. Water well. This is a tough plant and can adapt to its location. during the first year, water once every 2 weeks, more during drought. Once the plant is established, you will only need to water 3 or 4 times a year. In late winter, cut the plant down to about 15 inches. My husband, uses an electric hedge trimmer for this task. Be careful, the leaves can be sharp on the edges when you pick them up. The grass grows in a clump and will begin to sprout once the weather warms up. It can be a task if you decide to remove it in future years. It has a large root system and will probably require a grubbing hoe. The long plumes make wonderful additions to flower arrangements or alone in a vase. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Gardening, Texas Master Gardeners. We are an educational service organization of volunteers trained by Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. Visit westtexasgardening.org. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Monday, January 25th, 2021. Opinion. National View. Never forget these precious lives lost. The Point. The toll of the pandemic can become numbing. He'd wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning to get to the hospital for rounds so he could be at his office when it opened. He never took a break. That was Dr. Carlos Araujo Preza's daughter talking about her 51-year-old father, a pulmonologist in Texas who had been on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic before he died of the disease on November 30th. My mom was the smiling face, the one that everybody loved. That is how Deborah Ivory, 62, owner of a popular barbecue restaurant in Oklahoma City, was remembered by her son after she died of COVID-19 on December 13th. I told him I loved him and how sorry I was that he had to be in the hospital by himself. That was the wife of Pedro Ramirez recounting the final hours of her 47-year-old husband before he died of the coronavirus on January 4th. It has been a year since the first coronavirus case in the United States was reported. The toll of the pandemic is often recorded with the horrifying numbers. More than 400,000 people dead, daily death tolls as high as 4,000, and grisly comparisons. More deaths in a day than people killed on 9-1-1 or at Pearl Harbor. 8 times more total deaths than of Americans in a decade of fighting in Vietnam. The numbers can become numbing, but each loss is its own heartbreaking story. No part of the country, no racial, ethnic, or socioeconomic group has been spared. We had hoped that the first grim milestone of 100,000 COVID-19 deaths reached in May would have served as a wake-up call to the need to change habits and policies. Instead, thanks to the abdication of national and state leadership, it took 4 months for the country to reach 200,000 deaths, 3 more months to exceed 300,000 deaths, and now just 5 short weeks to hit 400,000 deaths. That effective vaccines are now being rolled out, albeit not as quickly as needed, and that Wednesday saw the inauguration of a president who has promised a plan of action against the pandemic are reasons for some hope. It is important, though, that we never forget the precious lives lost and how many could have been saved if government had not failed. The Washington Post. The other 30%. Going into Inauguration Day, a poll found that 66% of all Americans approved the way then-President-elect Joe Biden handled the transition. Deservedly so. If ever there were a perfect setup for a transition in disarray, it would be one where the loser is in the White House and he refuses to concede. And last week, not too many people were taking the odds that the Biden transition team would pull it off. It kept marching forward. While Donald Trump was riling up the crowd, Biden was announcing his nomination of the superbly qualified Judge Merrick Garland to lead a revived Justice Department. While the House was debating the impeachment of Trump, Biden cabinet nominees continued to meet with senators and prepare for their confirmation hearings. No disarray. President Biden takes office with the most experienced team of appointees of any president I can remember, which they need to be if they are to get this country vaccinated and employed again. The late William Safire, one of the great New York Times columnists, used to bemoan the disregard with which experience in government was derided, pointing out that in searching for a plumber, one never looks for the least experienced. Ditto for surgeons. Treasury secretaries facing unprecedented economic challenges, and doctors during a pandemic. Treasury Secretary nominee Janet Yellen, first up to bat, was a familiar face to the Senate committee, as are many of these nominees, an opportunity for senators to address economic issues and not her credentials. 4 years ago, they were swamp dwellers. There are, to be sure, snakes in the swamp, but very few of them volunteer for additional terms to face much bigger challenges than the last time around at a fraction of the salary they could be making outside of office, especially with all their connections. They have signed up for 4 years of limitless work and criticism. However many mistakes Biden and his team may make in the future, it is hard for even the, quote, conservative but honest, end quote, observers to point to any big ones they made during the transition. A few of the nominations have produced some blowback, but remarkably few for those who can remember the messy transitions of times past. So what stops me in my tracks is not the 66% who approved of the Biden transition, but the nearly 30% who didn't. As my grandmother would say, what's not to like? Or more accurately, what do they want? The answer, of course, is Donald Trump. By his never-ending assault, he has kept the election alive for those who most fervently backed him. Trump's approval rating is, in my book, far more stunning than President Biden's. He was right about being able to get away with murder on Fifth Avenue. He claimed he could do it and his supporters would still be with him. He came perilously close. Inciting a riot at the United States Capitol on live television is not really so different. He skipped Inauguration Day, and yet in post-riot polls leading up to Inauguration Day, between 39% and 41% of all Americans still approved of the job he was doing as president. I don't believe that those people are deplorables, as Hillary Clinton once called them at a fundraiser to her eternal regret. Unattainable, perhaps, if you're counting votes for moderates or trying to raise money from liberals. Leading up to the election, celebrities and politicians and old friends were purging all Trump supporters from their planet, but it doesn't work that way. Because the truth is that not all Trump supporters secretly hook up to an IV to get Fox News. Breaking all records in the days leading up to the election, an average of 5.3 million people watched the most watched program on Fox News, Tucker Carlson. By contrast, 74 million people voted for Trump, meaning less than 10% of them would have watched Carlson on his best night ever. Who are the rest getting information from? And how do Joe Biden and his team bring them into the fold so as to govern? Susan Estrich. Estrich is the Robert Kingsley Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of Southern California Law Center, as well as being a syndicated columnist. Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Sunday, January 24th, 2021. Other Voices. The Idle American, a warning this time. A Texas automobile driver was tooling down a rural highway on a lazy Saturday afternoon. Most motorists had already reached destinations, or maybe decided not to go. He felt alone, not another vehicle in sight on a long stretch of pavement. Suddenly, flashing lights in his rearview mirror were strong indicators that he wasn't alone. Further, he wondered if his definition of tooling might run sideways with the definition understood by the Department of Public Safety trooper ambling toward his parked vehicle. The nameless driver, whose thoughts and actions almost always come down on the side of the law, squirmed. His brain whirled with possible excuses to fall back on. His hands gripped the steering wheel with a choke hold. He began his spiel. "Officer, I'm sure that I may have been driving a little too fast, but I do want you to know that I am a licensed owner of a firearm that is locked and loaded under my seat." He wasn't dealing recklessly with the truth, but figured the trooper would appreciate knowing about his pistol if he decided to search the car. Smiling, the officer explained that a recorded speed of 75 miles per hour in a 60 miles per hour zone shot holes in the offender's claim of merely tooling along, but that this time he would issue a warning ticket. "And by the way, thanks for supporting the Second Amendment." Another favorite on the road story concerns a driver who also was tooling along some 10 miles per hour over the posted speed limit. "What lousy luck," he thought, "this unexpected cop encounter." He knew he'd never hear the end of it. Too many witnesses, he thought. His wife was alongside, and three elementary-aged children were engaged in backseat combat in whatever contest least resembled the quiet game. Just before the DPS guy reached his car, the driver hurriedly buckled his seatbelt. The officer in tall boots and eye shades proceeded with his usual greeting. "You were speeding, and I'm giving you a ticket." He warned about the danger of speeding, closing with an unexpected compliment. "But I do want to congratulate you for wearing your seatbelt." It was the driver's turn to speak. "Thank you, officer. I have long felt it to be important to wear seat belts, knowing that they save many lives and prevent many injuries. I always wear mine." Then the officer answered, emphasizing the word "always" in the same manner, "Do you always run it through your steering wheel?" And then there was the driver who claimed to ooze through a stop sign. "STOP doesn't spell ooze," the trooper contended as he issued the citation. Permit me one more could-have-happened road story. Let's set the scene. A long-haul trucker was driving slowly over a mountainous pass in a snowstorm. Suddenly, a lumberjack-sized man waved for him to stop. The driver felt sorry for the man who faced real danger, if not death by freezing, if he didn't stop to render aid. The parable of the Good Samaritan flooded his mind, so he stopped, offering the stranger a ride. The hitchhiker began yakking. "Exactly 10 years ago tonight, I was hitchhiking on this very road. I hailed down a truck that looked much like yours. I was much bigger than the trucker who gave me a ride, and I beat him up severely, kicked him out, and took over his truck. I was arrested at a truck stop a few hours later, went to trial, and was institutionalized until my release this morning." I remember you, the driver said. Before ending these road stories, I wonder how many remember the clever road signs nailed to fence posts by Burma Shave. Did you know that many of the ditties were written during college years by Warren Buffett, one of the world's richest men? Here's one of the messages. Angels who guard you when you drive usually retire at 65.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, January 26, 2021. Education Briefs. MISD campuses earn ERP Honor Roll distinction. Midland ISD reported that Carver Center and Early College High School have been recognized as Honor Roll student schools by the Educational Results Partnership. The press release stated that 943 elementary, middle, and high schools across Texas were recognized for this reward for academic achievement and improvement. ERP identified success factors including specific learning objectives, including based instructional practices, a defined system-wide mission of college and career readiness for all students, an investment in human capital, maintenance of data and assessment systems to monitor school and student performance, and resources and guidance to support schools' efforts in preparing all students for college and career. The Honor Roll is the only school recognition program in the state that uses student achievement and closing the gap outcomes in math and science as its criteria. High schools were also rated for preparing students for college. Tablet delivery to make MISD 1-to-1 technology district. Midland ISD announced that more than 12,000 learning devices are in the process of being delivered to campuses. This includes 8,167 Chromebooks for students grades 2 through 12 and 4,356 iPads for pre-K through first grade. The addition of the new tablets makes Midland a full 1-to-1 district, meaning there is one device for every student in Midland ISD.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, January 26th, 2021. Opinion. Don't put Capitol rioters on the no-fly list. If you've seen videos of people who took part in the U.S. Capitol riot weeping in shock after being barred from boarding their flights home, you may feel as Oscar Wilde did upon reading a tragic passage from a Charles Dickens novel. Quote, "One must have a heart of stone to read the death of Little Nell without laughing," end quote. But schadenfreude is not a good basis for government policy. In the aftermath of the horrifying January 6th rampage, the Transportation Security Administration said it was, quote, processing hundreds of names with law enforcement agencies for a thorough risk assessment, end quote, with an eye toward putting some of them on the federal no-fly list. Incoming Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer thinks anyone who was inside the Capitol building should be kept off airliners. Quote, "We cannot allow these same insurrectionists to get on a plane and cause more violence and more damage," he said. It's an understandable reaction to a poisonous attack on our elected representatives and our democratic system, but it would also be a gross and dangerous expansion of an ill-conceived program with a record of errors and abuses. The list was created as a way of preventing terrorists from hijacking planes, as a handful of fanatics did on 9-1-1. Its value was always doubtful, because tighter screening at airports, reinforced cockpit doors, air marshals, and a ban on knives have virtually eliminated the chance of such takeovers. These days, the worst thing a jihadist could do on a plane is remove his mask. TSA says those banned are, quote, a small subset of the U.S. government terrorist screening database, also known as the terrorist watch list, that contains the identity information of known or suspected terrorists, end quote. Note that the no-fly list is not meant to cover ordinary criminals, nutcases, or congregants in the cult of Trump. It's supposed to block only people on the terrorist watch list, and not even all of them. In practice, it has snared some people who posed no evident threat. In December, the Supreme Court allowed three Muslim men who were put on the list for refusing to become FBI informants to sue the responsible agents. The American Civil Liberties Union has represented clients who were blocked from flying for years, even though they had never been convicted of a crime, some of whom the government eventually approved to fly. The no-fly list is secret, and as of 2016, it reportedly contained some 8,100 people, including about 1,000 who were U.S. citizens or legal residents. From those figures, we can deduce that being a convicted criminal, even a violent one, does not prevent you from traveling by commercial airline any more than it prevents you from legally taking a train, driving a car, riding the subway, or hiking the Appalachian Trail. Felons can even get pilot's licenses. There is no obvious reason that people who invaded the Capitol deserve to be singled out. Does someone who forced his way into a congressional office and stole items pose a greater risk than someone who broke into a house and made off with a laptop? Is someone who smashed a window to enter the Capitol building more likely to try to hijack a plane than someone who smashed a window to protest the killing of George Floyd? There's a problem that Schumer and Company might consider before proceeding. If the no-fly list becomes a way of punishing people for violating laws, a lot of Americans stand to lose. Should someone be kept off airliners for joining a Black Lives Matter march that ends with some protesters throwing rocks? If we're going to have a no-fly list, it ought to target potential terrorists, not every mope who lands in the joint. How airlines deal with passengers they deem disruptive or threatening, of course, should be largely up to them. After the riot, Alaska Airlines permanently banned 14 customers because they were, quote, non-mask compliant, rowdy, argumentative, and harassed our crew members, end quote. Other airlines took similar actions against dozens of unruly passengers. Like any private company, airlines are entitled to banish patrons who make a nuisance of themselves. People who committed serious crimes on January 6th can be prosecuted, convicted, and incarcerated, some of them for many years. But that's no reason to decree that anyone who invaded the Capitol should be literally grounded for life. The government has plenty of ways to punish those who broke the law. The no-fly list shouldn't be one of them. Stephen Chapman. Chapman writes for the Chicago Tribune as well as being a syndicated columnist. Find out more. Read Chapman's daily blog, www.chicagotribune.com/news/opinion/Chapman. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, January 28th, 2021. Opinion. Presidential mercy is a woefully inadequate remedy for injustice. When Donald Trump pardoned Steve Bannon last week, the outgoing president blocked the former White House strategist's prosecution for bilking donors to an organization that claimed to be raising money for a wall along the border with Mexico. When Trump granted a commutation to Craig Cizal, by contrast, he freed a man who had already served 17 years of what was originally a life sentence for repairing trucks that were used to transport marijuana. As those examples reflect, Trump's acts of clemency mixed favors to cronies with relief for genuinely deserving federal prisoners hit with grossly disproportionate penalties. The controversy over his choices highlights long-standing problems with a clemency system that is, a woefully inadequate remedy for the injustices routinely inflicted by rigid and draconian federal sentences. Trump's final batch of 70 commutations brought his total to 94, which included dozens of nonviolent drug offenders, 18 of whom had received life sentences. He shortened more sentences than all but one of his 8 most recent predecessors. The one exception is Barack Obama, who granted a record 1,715 commutations, nearly all in his second term and the vast majority during his last year in office. Even Obama, however, approved just 5% of petitions for commutations, 5 times Trump's rate, which was in turn 10 times George W. Bush's rate, but still pretty slim odds for people languishing behind bars, often because of conduct that violated no one's rights. On Trump's last day in office, the New York Times complained that he had largely bypassed a rigorous Justice Department process for vetting and approving pardons and commutations. Yet that process, as the Times noted 2 days later, has left thousands of petitions waiting for review with a small team of lawyers unable to keep up. Margaret Love, who served as the Justice Department's pardon attorney from 1990 to 1997, says she was continually frustrated by the hostility of the prosecutors to whom I reported, who evidently feared that pardon would undo their hard work. Those prosecutors were unreceptive to suggestions that pardon could tell good news about their work by showcasing rehabilitation and redemption. As a result, Love says, the Justice Department sent few favorable pardon recommendations to the White House. While some of the system's critics think the White House should cut the Justice Department out of the process, as Trump effectively did to avoid this conflict of interest, Love argues that a better approach would be for Congress to let judges or executive agencies perform some of the clemency system's functions. People often seek pardons, for example, to recover their Second Amendment rights, something that Love suggests could be accomplished by application to an administrative agency or a court. She notes that the First Step Act, a 2018 law that Trump supported, authorized judges to reduce prisoners' sentences for extraordinary and compelling reasons, a reform that could be expanded to cover many of the people who are now desperately hoping for commutations. President Joe Biden has promised that he will broadly use his clemency power for certain nonviolent and drug crimes. He should do that throughout his administration instead of waiting until he is nearly out of office. Biden also favors abolishing the mandatory minimum sentences that he championed for decades as a senator. Such reforms, especially if they are retroactive, would have a much bigger impact than liberal use of clemency. During the first year after the First Step Act took effect, its relatively modest changes resulted in shorter sentences for more than 7,000 people. That amounts to less than 5% of federal prisoners, nearly half of whom are serving time for drug offenses. But the law still helped 4 times as many prisoners in 1 year than even Obama managed through commutations in 8. If Biden truly wants to atone for his long history as a hardline drug warrior, he cannot let sentencing reform sink to the bottom of his priorities. Jacob Sullum. Sullum is a senior editor for Reason magazine and a syndicated columnist.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Nebulizer with peroxide to prevent COVID-19. Dear Dr. Roach, I've been hearing about using a nebulizer with peroxide to treat or prevent COVID-19 infection. Is this effective? Is it safe? KG. Answer: It is neither effective nor safe. hydrogen peroxide is a powerful chemical that is toxic both to germs and to human cells. It should never be used undiluted on any part of the body, especially not on open wounds or on mucous membranes. Inhaling cleansing agents like peroxide or bleach is incredibly dangerous and can cause permanent lung damage. You can clean a nebulizer with dilute cleansing chemicals, but never inhale anything other than the prescribed medication.
Dear Abby, business owner struck dumb by customer's bigoted rant. Dear Abby, I'm a small business owner. My store has local, repeat, and one-time customers. The other day, while checking out, one of my local customers spewed out a verbal and extremely bigoted rant. I was stunned speechless. I felt I should do something, but I wasn't sure what it should be. I have started losing sleep over it. If it happens again, should I remain silent and keep the peace, or stand up for all Americans and lose this customer and probably more? Freaked out in Florida. Dear Freaked Out, to paraphrase a well-known saying, all that's necessary for evil to flourish is for good men to ignore it and say nothing. If the rant your bigoted customer spewed was aimed at another shopper, you had a responsibility to protect the victim of the onslaught. In the future, it would not be out of line to state firmly that you don't want that kind of talk in your establishment. While doing that may or may not lose you a few customers, you would at least be able to sleep better than you're sleeping now. P.S. It may also gain you some customers once word gets around. Dear Abby, I have been with the same doctor for 15 years, only requiring an annual checkup. The problem is, the office is about a 40-minute drive, longer if I hit a rush hour. I have stayed with the provider because the care is so good. However, I recently found a doctor who is 10 minutes away and provides the same quality of care. Do I call the original doctor to let him know I'm leaving the practice? Write a note? Leave it alone? What is the proper protocol? Good patient in Michigan. Dear patient, contact your longtime doctor's office and ask either that your medical records be sent to your new doctor's office or they be readied for you to pick up so you can deliver them yourself. In light of the fact that you have had a 15-year relationship with longtime doctor, it would be nice if you wrote a letter thanking him, her, for taking such good care of you all these years and explain that the commute has become more than you can now handle, which is why you are leaving. Dear Abby, I was sitting around bored with nothing to do and started thinking about my classmates from 1960. I hadn't seen or heard from some of them in more than 55 years, so I decided to call them and found all but two. Boy, was it ever worth it. Most of the conversations lasted 30 minutes or more. I enjoyed hearing their voices and reminiscing about old times. I couldn't believe how quickly the day went by. It made me feel great, and I hope it did the same for them. When I told them why I was calling, some of them thought it was such a good idea they were going to do it too. Maybe others will want to consider this. Try it. It's worth it. Catching Up in Wisconsin. Dear Catching Up, what you did was wonderful. Many people have been using this quarantine period to reconnect with long-lost friends, and I highly recommend it. There's no surer cure for the blues or boredom than reaching out to others. Thank you for an upper of a letter. Royal Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Aquarius and a moon in Leo. Happy birthday for Friday, January 29, 2021. Compassionate, courageous, and fun-loving, you stand up and fight for what you believe in. You're provocative only so that others recognize the issues at hand, and this year, this is how you succeed. Brilliantly. If single, it is definitely complicated. You do need your freedom. If attached, your partner gives you security, which, despite how radical you seem, you do need. You're happy this year. Pisces has it all handled. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. Happiness with children and creative breakthroughs are likely today. Accept imperfections philosophically. Express affection. Tender sentiments will be returned. Single Aries, you have to reach out more than before. Tonight, attached Aries, a very special date night with enlightenment. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Today there is more focus on your domestic environment. Be receptive to changing home and family dynamics. It's a perfect time to repair and redecorate your home and surroundings. You will feel proud of yourself. Tonight, the good feeling continues, shared with family. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 3 stars. You're worn out by your own nervous energy, and today promises an even more hectic pace as you rush to finish everything before the weekend. It's a marvelous time to work with computers and other technologies. Tonight, calls, emails, and conversations are most revealing. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. Your birth sign is shared with more bankers and millionaires than any other. Usually, you're well paid and manage money wisely. COVID has brought upheaval. Be flexible and don't invest in risky ventures today. Tonight, take advice with a proverbial grain of salt. Leo, July 23 through August 22, 4 stars. Expect to be highly visible. Your charisma and appearance directly impact your success today. There are changes brewing that will affect your profession and aspirations all year. Get the facts straight and don't panic just because the status quo is threatened. Tonight, have faith. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. There is a need to act and to meet challenges today. Keep a perspective and don't push yourself too hard in exercise. Controversy surrounds you. Make constructive efforts at improvement, but use care if too much irritation is building within or around you. Tonight, relax. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Cleanliness and efficiency spell your success today. Assuming the persona best suited to any occasion is second nature to you, but no whimsical side. A serious practicality helps you begin this new year successfully. Tonight, pride in a job well done. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. There could be a new authority and other challenges affecting your career. Communication is delicate today. Be cautious if speaking or writing about controversial topics. A relative is cultivating a new social circle. Be understanding and accepting. Tonight, rework your wardrobe. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 5 stars. You explore new philosophies today and are profoundly affected by different awakenings. Faraway places and foreign people turn your thoughts away from the familiar. Daydreams are vivid. You must listen now. Tonight, watching a dramatic foreign film or documentary. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. There is a curiosity about death's mysteries today. There is a message of wisdom and comfort from the spirit realm. A sense of déjà vu prevails. Look at repeating patterns to understand the future. Give yourself extra rest. Tonight, early beddy byes and a restful sleep. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 5 stars. A partner in love or business expresses new needs and interests. Others involve you in their plans. Be cooperative and understanding. Friends are recovering from difficult times and provide more cheerful companionship today. Tonight, grateful for the blessings of friendship. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 3 stars. Today can bring temporary weariness. Take care of old maladies and get extra rest when those occur. Avoid those who are ill. You're especially vulnerable today. Your overall health is good, but take these precautions for now. Tonight, trying to find a hot tub. Born today, actor Tom Selleck, 1945, writer Anton Chekhov, 1860, talk show host Oprah Winfrey, 1954.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.